Each of the guns spewed its lethal canister downrange in a spreading cloud. Lock Island could see splashes of dirt kicking up where the dispersing patterns wasted some of their shot short of the targets. It didn't matter, though. Where the rifle bullets had ripped the wood and canvas targets into tatters, the canister simply flattened them. Well, that wasn't quite fair, Lock Island decided, raising his spyglass and peering through it. The targets hadn't been flattened. They'd simply disintegrated. More bugles sounded, and the gunners stepped back from their weapons. The riflemen grounded the butts of their rifles, and whistles blew to signal the end of the fire exercise. That, Lock Island said, turning to the Marine officer standing beside him, was impressive. Very impressive, Brigadier.
Thank you, my lord,
Brigadier Kent Clerake replied.
The men have worked hard, and not just because we've made them, either. They're impatient to show someone else what they can do as well.
Lock Island nodded. He had no doubt at all who else Clerake's men wanted to demonstrate their prowess to, or rather, upon.
Soon, Brigadier, soon,
the High Admiral promised.
You know better than most what the schedule looks like. Yes, my lord.
Clerake might have looked just a teeny bit embarrassed, but Lock Island wasn't prepared to bet any money on it. And, if truth be told, no one had a better right to be impatient than Brigadier Clerake. After all, he was the one who'd written the training manual for the Royal Carisian Marines' new infantry tactics, and he'd also been Seamount's primary assistant in devising the world's first true field artillery tactics and integrating them with the infantry. He'd been a mere major then, not a brigadier. There hadn't been any Carisian brigadiers at the time. In fact, there hadn't been any brigadiers anywhere. The rank was less than 6 months old, suggested by Sajin Merlin as the Marines' buildup began to hit its stride. Lieutenant Lane, Clerake's second in command while he worked out the basic tactics for the new, longer-ranged and far more accurate rifles, was now a major himself and in charge of the ongoing training program here on Helen Island. And, Lock Island thought, looking back at the men of Clerake's 2nd Battalion as they formed smoothly back into column formation, Lane was doing just as good a job as Clerake had.
Actually, High Admiral, another voice said, I think we're probably going to need to consider moving our training operations, or perhaps simply expanding them into other locations.
Lock Island turned to the short, almost pudgy-looking officer standing on his other side. Baron Seamount had lost the first two fingers of his left hand to an accidental explosion years before, but the mishap hadn't dimmed his passion for loud explosions one bit, nor had it affected his sharp, incisive intelligence. Some people had been fooled by Seamount's relatively unprepossessing appearance, but Lock Island knew exactly how capable the brain behind that unimpressive facade really was, and how valuable. Although Seamount had been promoted from captain to commodore, Lock Island still felt vaguely guilty. By rights, Seamount should have had his own Admiral's command streamer by now, given all he'd done for Karis. And he would have had that streamer, too, except for one minor problem. Despite his undeniable brilliance, despite the fact that it was his brain which had devised the basis for the new naval tactics and, with Brigadier Clerake's able assistance, the new infantry and artillery tactics as well, Seamount hadn't been to sea in a command capacity in almost 20 years. He'd have been hopelessly out of place actually commanding a fleet or even a squadron. Besides, he was far too valuable where he was for Lock Island to even consider exposing him to enemy fire.